The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Let me make one final plea, Mr. President. Millions have put their trust in you, and as you told the nation yesterday, you have felt the providential hand of a loving God. In the name of our God, I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now.
It's been run by a bunch of radical lunatics, and we're getting them out. USAID, run by radical lunatics, and we're getting them out, and then we'll make a decision.
Because I'm looking at the whole Gaza Strip right now, and it's a mess. It's a real mess. We just clean out that whole thing.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it. Do a real job. Do something different. Just can't go back. If you go back, it's going to end up the same way it has for 100 years. And I don't want to be cute. I don't want to be a wise guy. But the Riviera of the Middle East, this could be something that could be so bad. This could be so magnificent.
Air Force One is currently in international waters, the first time in history flying over the recently renamed Gulf of America. Please enjoy the flight. And we are now about to head westbound to Super Bowl 59.
In recent years, the radical left has waged an all-out campaign to erase the very concept of biological sex and replace it with a militant transgender ideology.
Well, we have a situation where we haven't had elections in Ukraine, where we have martial law, essentially martial law in Ukraine.
You've allowed
from
yourself to be in a very bad position, and he happens
war.
To be right about
from
it.
From the very beginning of the war,
you're not
Mr.
in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
not
cards.
Playing cards.
Right now, you
I'm
don't. Yeah, you're playing cards.
The mistake was letting the war happen. If Biden were competent, and if Zelensky were competent, and I don't know that he is. We had a rough session with this guy over here. He just kept asking for more and more.
Yes. Do you have a reaction to Russia's Palm Sunday attack?
I think it was terrible, and I was told they made a mistake. But I think it's a horrible thing.
April 2nd, 2025 will go down as one of the most important days in modern American history.
For decades, our country has been looted, pillaged, raped, and plundered by nations near and far, both friend and foe alike.
Well, I thought that people were jumping a little bit out of line. They were getting yippy, you know, they were getting a little bit yippy. I did a 90-day pause for the people that didn't retaliate.
And we're here tonight in the heartland of our nation to celebrate the most successful first 100 days of any administration in the history of our country. And that's according to many, many people.
So many, many people praising Trump's first 100 days. A flavor of some of the utterances and events of those past 100 days of Trump 2.0, from a migration crackdown to cozying up to Russia to tariffs tanking the stock market. The Trump administration has packed a lot into that first 100 days. And if all of this happened in just 100 days, what's in store for the coming 1,361 days? Well, joining me to discuss, Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at UCD, Gina London, former CNN White House correspondent and Sunday Independent columnist, and TJ Malloy of Democrats Abroad Ireland. We're going to talk about the domestic achievements, if that's the right word, of this Trump 2.0, and then we'll talk about international affairs. But Scott, first of all, your reflections on that 100 days.
Trump supporters will be out this morning. I think you had one, Albert Eisenberg, last hour, and they'll say, oh, he's a man of action, and the voters wanted this. So let's hit this on the head. What you have after almost 100 days in Trump 2.0 is an administration that's not only aspiring to be an authoritarian regime, it is an authoritarian regime. So by action, what we mean is destruction. We mean destruction first of U.S. agencies so that they cannot be independent. They cannot do anything that Trump does not like. And I can give you a whole list of agencies and programs that have been axed. But only yesterday, for example, the National Climate Assessment, which is done every 4 years in the U.S. to map climate change. Every single researcher who was on the National Climate Assessment in 2023 was fired yesterday.
You see, Trump doesn't believe in climate change. Therefore, there is nothing to monitor by his lights.
Absolutely right. And in fact, American scientists have been blocked from doing any type of climate research, including collaboration with others. But that's just one example of the agencies and what they're told they can and cannot do. The Pentagon axed the Women's Security and Peace Program yesterday, which is meant to encourage women to go into the armed forces and to protect them when they are there. The agencies get destroyed, records get stolen, people get fired, thousands fired, more forced to resign. Then what do? You go after the courts. You insult the courts, you assail them on social media, and you defy them, including the Supreme Court. Then you go after the media to make it bend the knee to you. You go after the universities. You go after NGOs. And anything that is simply not towing the line cannot be tolerated. I'm just going to be blunt. And I'm speaking now as a person who was born and raised in the United States as well as an analyst. For me, it is the most serious domestic crisis since the end of the Civil War in 1865.
All right, TJ, how is this allowed to happen? Because there are complaints that the CEOs of big companies are not speaking up and saying this is crazy stuff. These are powerful people in America because money talks. And there are many benefactors to the Democratic Party who are saying nothing.
Far from not speaking up, I don't know if you heard that Amazon was going to add the...
what did he do? He immediately buckled.
Well, he immediately called Bezos, and then Bezos called whoever he called, and then Amazon buckled.
Now, just to explain to people, it was intended by Amazon, they say, although Bezos denied it was ever going to happen, that they were going to indicate on the price that people paid on Amazon for their goods ordered from Amazon, they would indicate how much was caused by tariffs. A bit like, you know, you buy a meal in a restaurant here and you see how much is VAT.
And just like most people have been, most Irish who have visited America see a sales tax, which differs from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. It might be 9% in New York. It's 8% in Ohio, where I'm from. In Cleveland, it's 50 miles south. It's 6%. This is what Amazon was proposing. Tumi, which is the very cheap Chinese, you see, online retailer, they've started doing it. And $30 worth of goods had a $45 tariff charge on top of it. So $75 for $30 worth of goods. This is what's coming down the pike in the next 8 weeks.
Okay, but going back to people not speaking up, I mean, Jeff Bezos, you may say, attempted to speak up, although he denied he was part of that. It was someone else's idea. And if it was his idea, he immediately buckled. One phone call from the Donald and he reverses course.
Well, this is the oligarchy at work. This is what we had at the inauguration. We had all those tech giants and tech billionaires, and they're all bending the knee. Because they need to do business, they want to do business. And we have no better example than Elon Musk, who's not only bending the knee, but funded Donald Trump's election to the tune of $250 million plus. He seems to have taken a bit of a step back due to his cratering stock price in Tesla. We'll see how that goes. But the oligarchs, I guess we're just calling them oligarchs now, the tech oligarchs, they're in line with this because they see where the bread is buttered. They're very worried about regulation. There are antitrust lawsuits going through against Google, against Facebook, which owns WhatsApp, Instagram, etc. So, you know, the resistance is not there. And as much as they say the Democratic Party isn't doing enough, we saw the attention that Al Gore got. So, now, Al Gore got that attention because he has a profile. He was never president, but quite a high profile. For the Democrats to fight this in the media landscape we have now is very, very hard without someone of high stature who can draw that attention. And unfortunately, I think we're lacking that now. I think leadership will step forward out of where we don't quite know yet. But I think that will come to the fore in the coming months because out of necessity and out of the midterms are still a long way away, but they're getting closer every day.
Gina, you obviously saw the White House in action up close and personal. How does Trump's White House differ from the White House of your experience?
In every single category. I mean, as I was listening to the other two commentators, it's just feeling more and more deflated as you're listening to the drumbeat. I mean, it's been a whirlwind over the last 100 days. And to echo what they say, we've got DOGE firing hundreds of thousands of people in this random sweep, and they'd initially bragged that they were going to save $2 trillion, but they've apparently only saved like $1.6 billion, and they've cost about $1.4 billion in counting while they're continuing to do this. And I think the only thing that is giving me a little bit of buoyancy as we're marking 100 days are the poll numbers across every category. he's underwater, maybe a small bit above water when it comes to the border. But his marks on immigration are even underwater, and that was supposed to be his thing. His marks on tariff and inflation are terrible, and Trump is so unpopular that he's even managed to break his own record of unpopularity during his first term at 100 days. But it has been a relentless shite show, and the lack of humanity and the lack of due process. And just last week, Mahmoud Khalil, the legally allowed to be student at Columbia, who was detained down in Louisiana and is married to a U.S. citizen, his wife delivered their first child, and Trump's administration refused to allow him to release him from detention in Louisiana to be there for the birth. And he's still not been formally charged with the crime.
And we know that when you look at the Pew polling, for instance, Americans do want to see due process. They believe that if the courts make an order, that it should be obeyed by the administration. If the Supreme Court makes an order, that the administration should respect it. But that does not seem to be the direction in which we're heading.
Well, the Supreme Court order that said that you need to bring back 9-0 to bring back the person that was detained.
They gave wiggle room. They said facilitate the return.
Facilitate, right. And that's the wiggle room that Stephen Miller and others in the Trump administration are choosing then to ignore. But the point is, you've got a Supreme Court, you've got other judges who are making other due process orders, but this Trump administration is disregarding them. So the slide to authoritarianism, as I think, Scott, your first commentator mentioned, it's not just happening, it's happened. And this is really, really distressing. You're seeing protests come out. You are seeing on when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders went out and did their tour recently, you are seeing in what would normally be considered red cities in red states, tens of thousands of people coming out. You've seen the pictures from the town halls of Republican Congress people going back into their districts and Republican people saying, what is going on? What is the story with DOGE? How is this unelected billionaire running rampant with these teenagers in our federal employee? You can talk about reforming government, but you're not doing it in any humane sort of way. USAID has practically been completely dismantled, with the State Department saying that now they'll be taking over what's left of it. And people are dying. You've got rampant measles spreading unchecked, and children are dying. And it is, they're gutting cancer research. They're eliminating food safety inspections. This $800 billion spending package that now the Congress is back from their two-week Easter recess they're supposed to be voting on, that can gut Medicaid and Social Security. And I think that's where the real people, the MAGA people who are dependent upon these types of aid programs, are going to continue to come out. And it's only with continued poll numbers declining like they are that I think there'll be any accountability, if at all, from the Trump administration, because they're not getting pressure from the Democrats in a uniform way, and they're not getting pressure from the
I'll come to TJ on what the Democrats should or might be doing in a moment. But Scott, you don't come from a big city background. You come from rural America. Can you explain to our listeners, because a number of texters have already said, look, 50% of the American public who voted for Trump cannot be all stupid people. Can you explain why they can't see through Trump? He's a con man who went wallop, six times bankrupt in a few years. He's a guy who is like a snake oil salesman trying to sell them coins or Bibles or whatever it is, who criticized China while manufacturing his stuff in China.
Yeah, in part, it's the spectacle to go beyond reality. Remember Trump's infamous quote in the 2016 campaign? I could shoot a man in the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York City and people would still vote for me. And that's what he tends to do. But in part, and I don't think we should ignore it, Pat, you know, people, when they went to the polls last November, they worry about their day-to-day situation. They worry about their jobs. They worry about the economy. They hear stories about what's happening with immigration. And the reality on the economy and immigration, in a big sense, doesn't necessarily get through. I mean, the U.S. economy was actually on the upturn last year, inflation dropping significantly, GDP up, immigration down 75% across the U.S.-Mexico border. But if these people are getting their feelings reinforced day to day by much of the U.S. media, which is, oh, it must be bad, it feels bad, et cetera, they go against the incumbent, which was the Democrats. And that, of course, was compounded by the fact that Joe Biden had put the Democrats in an awful position. Now, however, Trump is not in opposition. Trump is in power. And for all the destruction he's causing, if people don't see their lives getting better in terms of jobs, in terms of prices, in terms of eggs on the shelves, petrol in their cars, then you'll see that disapproval rating that Gina's talking about accelerate even further. And I suspect next month we're already going to get to a critical point because the tariffs are going to lead to a serious spike in price rises.
Now, I pointed out to Albert Eisenberg earlier on that the reason Trump got into office was the Democrats didn't turn up. Joe Biden got 81 million votes. Had Kamala Harris got 81 million votes, she would be president and not Trump. So the Democrats failed America.
Well, the Democrats failed to field a candidate that could draw that type of support.
But I mean, the warnings were there from both Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and others that this was heading to autocracy. People may not have seen the oligarchy as clearly as they saw his dictatorial instincts. And Project 2025 was the roadmap to all of this. It was all written down. And some Democrats were warning about it, yet Democrats didn't convey that message to get people to turn out.
Well, it was very much a story of 2016 as well. This is what happened with the Hillary vote, you know.
Was it a woman? Was that the problem?
I don't know, Pat. What my thesis is that it was 5% of the swing voters went into the ballot box. They said 4 years ago, I had more money when Trump was president. And I was better off 4 years ago. And that 5% said, I'll give this guy another chance. I was better off.
Is the economy stupid?
It's the economy. Everything comes down to the economy. Bread and butter issues. But we want to talk about what are the Democrats going to do. I can't say what they can do. They're just short of powerless here. But what we do have is we have 20 Republican representatives wrote to the Speaker of the House, and they said, we do not want these cuts of Medicaid. That is the first kind of pushback we're getting for this new budget that's coming. So Trump is going to create a budget here. Well, Congress will create it, but it'll be on his terms. And that is, they want to vote against Medicaid without saying they're voting against Medicaid and Social Security and all the safety programs we have, which are compared to a European country are
Minimal.
You know, basically you won't starve to death. But other than that, you know, Obamacare created quite a larger pool for Medicaid that people qualify for. And a lot of states have signed on to that. A lot of red states have signed on to it because it really covers a lot of their poor and not even poor, their working poor population. Where do we go from here? Where does the Democratic Party go? Where does the country go?
But where's the leadership? I mean, AOC and Bernie Sanders, who's an independent, out there campaigning, drawing huge crowds. And then there are popular movements on the street having demonstrations. There are also people going to town halls and making their points. But looking at the Democrats, they seem helpless. There is no clear leadership. Chuck Schumer is probably yesterday's man.
Quite surely, I would think. I would be my opinion. But there, right now, like you just saw, and as mentioned before, just Al Gore coming out forcefully to defend the Constitution and what it was written for.
Did you see Governor Pritzker, who was absolutely made a riveting speech the other night? You saw it, Scott?
Yeah.
Gina, did you happen to see it?
No, I saw clips of it, so I know that he's absolutely been taking a front and center stage about how he's trying to bring people back together. And I think he's got a really good profile and a way of speaking that is resonating with not just people in his state of Illinois, but across
his background. You see, he's Jewish. His people fled from oppression. Their background is Ukrainian Jewish. And he's a man who has the credentials, if you like, to criticize Trump for what he's doing in Ukraine and his general attitudes towards, drifting towards autocracy or dictatorship. Because his Governor Pritzker's family have been there, done that. They know what it's like.
Well, and that's what it's going to take, is more people that can resonate with the core voters that will come out in the midterms. And, of course, that's also important, like you were talking about earlier, how many voters didn't come out during the most recent election. And there's a big reason that didn't go for the Democrats. Of course, we can also talk about how Biden pulled out and then Kamala came in, and that was also deterred people from voting. But if they can get people to come out resonating with what Pritzker's talking about, resonating with, don't forget, Senator Cory Booker, who isn't quite ready to make a move against Senator Schumer as the leader of the Senate, but could, because he did such a fantastic job recently when he created the new world record for U.S. record for speaking so long in the Senate chamber, overthrowing, of course, Strom Thurmond, that if you can get people like that to start to get broader views being expressed in a way that's going to bring people out to the poll and turn it for the Democrats in the midterm, which, of course, is far away from what feels like 100 days or 100 years, that still could be something. You do even have now Senator Booker and the House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries holding a sit-out protest in Capitol Steps. So there are efforts continuing to be made. Is there one Al Gore, one Governor Pritzker? No, not yet, but I think you're seeing it building.
Scott?
And again, those poll numbers make a difference.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a media narrative, Pat, that the Democrats are powerless, and Trump does suck the oxygen out of the room quite often. But it's important to follow up TJ and Gina to note that no, Democrats have not been completely powerless. Gina referred to Cory Booker's marathon speech that got media attention. But then Cory Booker and Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic leader in the House, holding the 12-hour effectively teach-in on the Capitol steps this weekend to talk about social services, to talk about the threat of the Republican budget. And then you have the meetings, which you kind of referred to, going on in town after town, state after state, which aren't just to challenge Republicans. They are Democrats trying to reorganize and independent voters as well. I think we need
Trump is underwater with independent
absolutely
voters.
Right. I think we need to get away in the media from two things. One is, I think we need to get away with a false narrative that the Democratic Party is just the party of the left and that moderates and conservatives are disappearing. That's absolutely a red herring. Secondly, I think we need to get away from the fact of looking at who's going to challenge Trump in 28. We need to get back to the fact that these issues are of immediate concern, and you need to look at the grassroots, where they're going to be challenged at the local and state level, as well as putting up a fight in Congress against some of these.
Now, I want to play a little bit of audio because it kind of gets to the core of Trump's appeal. Now, this guy is pretty kooky. I saw it on the Jimmy Kimmel show last night. He was outside the 100 days rally on the way in, and this is what he said.
When he talks about common sense, that's common law. So when we go back to common law is what we need to be going back to. When he took out, when he walked in front of the Queen, people got crazy and said, he's crazy. No, he did that purposely because there's three pillars. There's London, there's the Vatican, and Washington, D.C., right? Well, the Queen was taken out. She's gone, right? Trump took over Washington, D.C., and now the Pope is gone. Those three pillars are gone. So now we're coming back to common sense.
Scott?
There's one in every bunch. My grandfather.
No, but there's more than one in every bunch.
Yeah, my grandfather used to say that P.T. Barnum, the circus impresario, had a quote. I don't know if it's true. There's a sucker born every day and two to take them. Fact is, there are a lot of people who, because of the range of social media, the range of deceptions, the range of disinformation, they will pick up on that. And it gets magnified because those are the crazy quotes we focus on. I think we have to go back to the fact, though, that there are a lot more Americans out there who won't believe that the Queen was part of the lizard people or that the Pope was the head of an international conspiracy or that Trump is actually even a savior. I think those folks are actually a significant minority who are the squeaky wheel who gets the grease. It's going to be those folks who are asking, what's happening to our health care? What's happening to our Social Security? What's happening to our alliances abroad, which we'll talk about in a minute? And what's happening to decency in American politics? Those are the people we should be focusing on.
Okay, but going back to TJ of the Democrats abroad, TJ, the notion that the Democrats went kind of too far down the woke agenda. I mean, there are many people who say when Trump said that you can't have someone who was born a man competing in swimming, for example, against women, a guy who, as a guy, couldn't win a swimming competition, but as a woman, after transition, won everything. Didn't he strike a chord with many people who said that's patently unfair?
Yeah, I'm sure that resonates with a certain bit of the population. But is that what put him over?
I'm just saying that the kind of policies, the extreme wokeness that has been attributed to the Democratic Party might have been their undoing. The whole idea, I remember years ago when we had no contraception here. You couldn't get condoms in Ireland, believe it or not. And Charlie Haughey brought in a legislation that allowed condoms to be purchased in pharmacies.
From behind
and you
the counter,
had to be married.
Yeah.
And da-da-da. But he was moving slowly. And eventually, of course, you've total widespread availability of condoms in toilets and all that for a few coins. That kind of thing, you don't go too far ahead of your electorate. And maybe that's what the Democrats have done.
Maybe it is, Pat. This diagnosis could be there for a few percentage of the vote, of the national vote on such a on that scale. But I really don't think so. Those are edge issues that, you know, maybe, you know, it's a very close election. Did that cost 1.6 points that Kamala lost by? I don't know. But did they get out ahead of their skis on that issue, on the trans issue and a few others? It's very hard to blame such an election that was such a huge election on such a small issue, or what I consider a small issue. I think they said
but a small issue, yeah. Small percentages. And
yeah, they do make a difference.
That was the difference. Yeah.
Yeah. And did they get too far?
I would add to what you're talking about right now, in the sense that I think what the Republicans can do, Trump in particular, but those MAGAs around him, that he continues to do extremely well, is oversimplify complex issues. So he takes an idea like the one person in a swim meet in an obscure situation, and he propels that story to be the oversimplified mantra that they latch onto. Democrats, on the other hand, and I work in messaging and communications now, and I would be a registered Democrat, so I sympathize with this, but they tend to complex issues with the way they speak about it, because they're trying to talk about the nuances and all these kinds of details. It was what sunk Hillary when she was doing 25-page policy descriptions, when Trump was just doing build the wall. And people who are busy and are making a quick vote emotionally, they want a quick story that they can latch onto. If Democrats can do simple messaging for complex issues in a positive way, I think that's a way forward.
On the trans issue, remember when Trump was saying, you send your child to school as a boy and he comes home as a girl? I mean, daft and mad stuff. But
exactly, but here we are repeating it right now, and so that just shows you how these little simple quips are things that can resonate and ripple out, regardless of there being any data to back it up. And that's where Democrats have an opportunity to create the positive, quick messages that we can all recall.
MADA. I've said this before, MADA, make America decent again, or make America democratic again. Yeah.
I love it. But let's just get away from the whole Maha MAGA thing altogether. Can we get different hats that are made in America with a different slogan altogether?
I'll take a MATA hat from you. Make it decent again, Pat, because we tend to fall into a trap, which is we get led by the nose by the idea of the Democrat Party being extremely woke. Spoiler alert, it's not. And secondly, we get away from the QAnon issue. Transgender people, people with transgender identity are people. They want to live their lives. You may take a small issue, which is what should be the standards on sporting events, and we can discuss that logically, rationally, and so on. But the fundamental is that Donald Trump has proposed erasing them as a group. They are to disappear entirely in America. And not just Democrats, but everybody should say that is wrong.
We have lots to talk about. We're going to continue looking maybe more at the foreign policy agenda. And I'll ask our panelists to just consider this. The lying of Donald Trump and the lying of his administration. I mean, these are barefaced, fact-checkable lies that he gets away with. And that is really part of the issue for media, when people just say black is white, when black, in fact, is black.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Aviva.ie.
So many texts coming in, I'll read you just one. When they start trying to eliminate the late night TV hosts, as they all can see Trump for what he is, that's when the slide to full authoritarianism will be complete, because they make a fool of him every day. And clearly he doesn't like it. He's had a long running feud with Jimmy Kimmel, for example. Now, Scott, we want to talk about the impact of the US in the world and how the actions of Trump have diminished that.
Yeah, I think, Pat, we could talk generally about how U.S. standing is decreasing. We could talk about the effect of slashing entire agencies. A U.S. Agency for International Development provided $43 billion in humanitarian programs last year. But if I could go to two specifics, when you're talking about a Russian full-scale invasion of Ukraine, which has tried to make that country capitulate, and indeed in the past 24 hours, Russian officials have restated they want the Zelensky government out. They want them to surrender. And when you have an administration that walks away from support of Ukraine's resistance and then is just inconsistent and chaotic in trying to get the supposed deal, when you have unqualified people who are put in to lead American diplomacy, like the real estate developer Steve Witkoff.
Yeah, he went to the Elysee Palace and claimed that it reminded him of Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
Come on.
And he did that. And in fact, just to give you a textbook example, I do think, in fact, there's hope because Europe is supporting Ukraine and Russia's overplayed its hand. But last Friday, Witkoff went in to see Vladimir Putin.
He almost kissed him.
Yeah. And then when Witkoff got to the table after Putin spoke to him in English, brought him across, Putin's got his top advisors there. Witkoff's got no one except a young woman. And he looks at her and he doesn't recognize who she is. And he says, wait a minute. Oh, are you the translator? Are you from the embassy? You know, that's not responsible diplomacy. And if we were to talk about Gaza, where that mass killing continues after 18 months, where you have effectively the U.S. administration has now checked out on this because of
the Democrats are at one with Trump in supporting Gaza.
Yeah,
the Israelis, rather.
And I think we could talk to TJ about that and Gina about that. But the fundamental here is, look, the man in charge, Donald Trump, once it got tough, and once it was clear there would not be a phase two of the ceasefire, what does he do? He says, we'll simply have ethnic cleansing and get rid of all the Gazans, and we'll have Riviera with my golden statue there. That's not American leadership. That's not a responsible American foreign policy. And to top all of this off, my takeaway line is, for almost 80 years, we counted on an international system where you had U.S. alliances, allies in Europe, allies in Asia, working in the United Nations. Now, it hasn't been perfect. There's a lot of things we can challenge. But there is no U.S. alliance now with partners under this administration. That's not the way they operate.
Now, we saw before, Gina, when we had the Paris Accords and on climate change, and Donald Trump abandons them, Biden then goes back in. We had the dismantling of the nuclear discussions by Trump the last time out on in Iran. The question is, has Trump now damaged American credibility permanently that no matter what deal America does, people will say, well, they're probably not going to keep it, whether it's this administration or the next one. They'll back off on pretty much any deal. They cannot be trusted.
Well, certainly under this administration, you are absolutely right. The trust is obliterated. I mean, you just saw the incredible retaliation for Trump's declaring Canada being the 51st state over and over again in the massive resurge of the Liberals and Mark Carney becoming Prime Minister of Canada. I mean, that when Trudeau was resigning, it was looking like it was going to be conservative. And then Trump comes out with all the things he's saying. And then now you've got incredibly strong words from Mark Carney. And as Scott was saying, too, the idea of the USAID being decimated with these tariffs on again, off again, the 90-day countdown going on, the uncertainty around what Donald Trump will do at his whim, and then it becomes policy, is giving a real opportunity now for China to position itself as we are the trusted partner. And that's what it's doing. It's going around to these developing nations. I worked for USAID as a country director in Egypt after my time with CNN. And so China now is going to these countries in Africa and other places saying, we'll give you development opportunities. We'll be a trusted partner. Can you imagine that this is the state of the world that we're in at this time?
So going to you, TJ, on America's place in the world. So maybe next time after midterms, maybe the Democrats get control of the House and can change things. But the general reputation of America, can they be trusted? Because every 4 years you might have some cook coming in and doing crazy things.
Yeah, it's the damage is being done hour by hour, day by day. And we can just see it when you have a brand new Canadian prime minister, just newly elected, who talks about the American betrayal and how they're now talking about joining the EU. I mean, this is really what's going on. If they're going to turn their back on America, turn the back might be too strong a term, but it can't be a trusted ally. And, you know, what we're having now again with China and the lack of an industrial policy in the United States, tariffs have a place. They have a place. Like we just saw Trump come up with some crazy thing was stacking with the auto companies. So certain parts, they won't get an aluminum tariff because they're going to have an import tariff, et cetera, et cetera. Why wasn't this thought out and done two months ago? And what we've done is we've alienated our allies right when we probably need the most. You know, China, you know, I mean, I just looked up a lot of stuff. China has 2 times U.S. manufacturing. It's going to have 4 times U.S. manufacturing by the end of the decade. It has 3 times U.S. car production, 13 times U.S. steel production, 20 times U.S. cement production, 200 times shipbuilding. I mean, even if that's an exaggerated figure, that's astounding. And right at the time we need our allies most, we're alienating them the most. And, you know, when you look at the strength of Europe, you know, everyone's having problems lately. Don't get me wrong. There's problems in Europe. There's problems in the United States, problems with Canada, problem Mexico. But, you know, when we work together, and I might sound a bit like Joe Biden, I don't mean to, you know, we have 3 times the GDP of China between Japan, Australia, the Indo-Pacific region, North America, and Europe. We have 2 times GDP per capita. We have 1.5 times the manufacturing. At the time, we need to be uniting and fighting to stick together, stake a place
but
in the
China,
world.
But China has decided, okay, we can't buy American beef anymore. We're not going to. We're going to buy it from Australia. We can't buy energy anymore from the United States. We're going to buy it from Australia and so on and so forth. They're going to do deals. They're probably going to do deals with Ireland on food. We already have quite a healthy export to China on food. I mean, China is seeing this as open season.
Exactly, Pat. This is the damage that's being done. I mean, can you instead of the United States being able to go to Australia and say, you know what? Our tariffs between each other are low. Let's get rid of those. But at the same time, we need an exclusive agreement with you that you're only going to sell so much to China or only provide them with so much this and that.
Finally, Scott, I should ask you, is this reversible in any short term, or is this for the long term? We're going to have a MAGA Republican Party. We're going to have the extreme right growing in the United States. Or can we get back to the America we knew?
Okay, I'll speak to you personally now, Pat. I mean, in the short term, it's dark, right? But I always go back to darkest before dawn. There are a lot of good people in America that don't want destruction. They don't want division. They don't want America disappearing from the world scene. Make America decent again. That's what they want. What we need is to get back to hearing those voices, talking to those folks, whether it be here in Ireland, whether it be back in the States. Because just from talking to people in these past few weeks, whether you're talking about in red states like in Iowa, like where I grew up in Alabama, whether you're talking in blue states like Massachusetts or in between, people want day-to-day security. And if we can focus on that and also focus on the fact that America has values which we has not lived up to but should be embraced, maybe we find a better way.
That's a good way to conclude our discussion. Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at UCD. Gina London, former CNN White House correspondent and Sunday Independent columnist. And TJ Malloy of the Democrats Abroad Ireland. Thank you all very much.